Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Sarah Gonzalez filling in for Brian. And here to help us make sense of the recent elections in the U.S., in France, and the U.K. is Bill Emmett, former editor-in-chief of The Economist and chairman of the Wake Up Foundation. We'll be talking about the big ideas he writes about in his new book, The Fate of the West, The Battle to Save the World's Most Successful Political Idea. And we'll get to some more newsy topics like the British elections that shocked the world and the protests that have been taking place in Russia this week. Bill Emmett, welcome back to WNYC.
Terrific to be here.
Listeners, I want to start with you. If you're British, either living in the UK or if you're a British expat and you want to share your thoughts on the recent UK elections, the election of Prime Minister Theresa May, Brexit, or parliamentary elections, maybe you voted for Brexit but then decided to vote for the Labour Party in the parliamentary elections, we want to hear from you. Our number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Bill, in your book, you refer to the West as the world's most successful political idea. When you talk about the West as an idea, what exactly do you mean?
I mean the idea of an open society, open to new ideas, to new people, to new systems, to competition, to interchange with other countries, matched with democracy that creates equality, of participation, of citizenship, of political rights. Goes back way to the ancient Greeks, but we've only really been doing it properly for the last couple of hundred years in some countries, but actually in most countries for the last 70 years since the Second World War. So the West, by that I mean the open, liberal, democratic societies that also have formed alliances with one another, like NATO, like the US-Japan Security Treaty, like setting up systems of international law also to keep the world stable and secure. That's what I mean by the West, and it's the idea that the West has followed of openness and equality that has made us more prosperous than we've ever been in the history of the world.
So the West, meaning that we are open, partly, that's at least in part what you're saying, but do you believe that the West has ever truly been open and equal? I mean, to this day, you know, people of color, women, the LGBTQ community are still discriminated against. Is the idea of the rest of the West really more a matter of striving for openness and equality rather than actually having achieved it?
It's always a work in progress.
Okay.
Look, I remember when I was editor of The Economist, 1994, I think it was, 1995, we put on the cover the case for legalizing same-sex marriage. We were very early in that process. Most of our readers thought we were insane or something not very pleasant. It caused a vast backlash, but you know, less than 25 years later, it's a normality. So I think that in terms of equality of rights, of political participation, of the basic civil rights of citizenship, we have moved steadily in the right direction, but often not at the right speed.
Okay, and you write that we have lost sight of what the West has always signified. In what ways have we lost sight?
Well, I think that we, first of all, have made some huge mistakes. The big mistake that signifies that some of the losing sight of what the West is about was symbolized by the 2008 financial crisis that I believe was a consequence of a loss of equality in the sense that the financial sector, financial power, oligarchs of the financial sector, banks all over the world, not just in Wall Street, but the City of London, European banks, gained an excessive power over politics and public policy, which led to the incredible credit boom that then went into an incredible bust, produced the worst financial crisis and potential Great Depression for 80 years, and has been immensely difficult to recover from. So it's a consequence of a loss of political equality, a distortion of the democratic system that got built in, that then has produced a further near decade of lack of resources in government and lack of resources in politics to be able to deal with some of the problems. So if you say why was Donald Trump elected in the US last November? Why did Britain vote for Brexit? Why was Marine Le Pen in the French presidential election getting double the vote that her father had got 15 years before? It's because of the anger of those who felt that they'd been made to sacrifice for the consequences of that financial crisis.
And how do you see President Trump and his constituency as a threat to Western ideals?
Well, the main way in which President Trump and his constituency are a threat lies in their desire to close the society in all sorts of ways, to close it to trade, to close it to immigration quite severely, to close it in terms of the connections that the U.S. makes with other countries because of the way in which this America First policy is being implemented, and to separate it by either weakening or even actively being hostile to the sort of alliances that we've had. That's the first way. A longer-term way could be the undermining of some of the institutions of democracy and the rule of law and the process of justice and equal rights in this country. But I wouldn't say that we've seen that yet, but I think that there's good reason to be worried about it.
And listeners, if you want to weigh in on the, quote, fate of the West, especially after the election of President Donald Trump, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You say that the world's most successful political idea needs saving. What caused this vulnerability?
Well, it's us. I think that we get complacent. We take things for granted. The basic values we inherit in each generation, we think have been there forever, and actually they're amazingly brief and recent and fragile. But also, I think that the democratic system in particular, like the market system, has natural flaws, where the competition to win power and win influence leads to the concentration of power to attempt to get an excessive political voice. Somebody, Thomas Jefferson, I think it was, said two centuries ago that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And I think the price of democracy is a form of eternal vigilance, because democracy, like a market which tends towards a monopoly, democracy tends towards an effort to concentrate power and to get an excessive grip over public policy that the citizenry, the political parties, the institutions need constantly to fight against, sometimes with, you know, dramatic change, often with bit-by-bit defense of the basic equality of political life.
You said that we maybe take Western ideals for granted. Can you put that into context for us? I mean, maybe in light of the protests in Russia that have been taking place, or the fact that Britain voted for Brexit, then sort of changed course and sided more with the left Labour Party. It seems like they maybe were at some point taking for granted this idea of the West and then kind of tried to reverse course. Is that accurate?
Well, I think that not all of these symptoms, phenomenon that are happening are sort of attacks on the West, but nevertheless, they have some shared characteristic of being of anger that is leading to a desire to close doors, close minds, close systems as a protective measure. Sometimes it's a response to fear of terrorism and security issues. Sometimes it's a response to job losses, fear of globalization, fear of robots taking our jobs that leads us to want to subsidize the coal industry or to raise tariffs on steel imports, which is what the Trump administration is working on. Or in the case of the French debate in the election, Marine Le Pen was talking about pulling France out of the European Union, not just because she didn't like the European Union, but because she wanted to raise trade barriers and close the system, especially to immigration. Brexit was particularly about immigration in Britain. We're an open society in every other way, but we've had a backlash against immigration. So it's this kind of process that I'm witnessing.
But despite predicted trends towards conservatism and nationalism in Britain, the UK, The Conservative Prime Minister lost the majority in the parliament this month. The opposition Labour Party, led by the left-wing politician, gained 29 seats in the parliament. Are these results, and also the election of Liberal French President Emmanuel Macron, signs that Europeans are, in fact, I guess, engaging in a battle to save the West?
Well, I think that the election of Emmanuel Macron, 39-year-old French president, the youngest French leader since Napoleon, who'd formed his political party only less than a year ago, is a sign that the desire to reform and improve what France has built over the last half century is stronger than the desire to knock it down. So that's absolutely clear. Britain is a much more ambiguous sign of this. You know, Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, is a sympathizer to Vladimir Putin. Mm. He has sympathized also with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. He's been close to the Cubans. He would like to subsidize the coal industry in Britain and reopen coal mines. He's not a liberal in the sort of progressive sense, except insofar as he is an idealist about equality. But so I think that what we're seeing is a massive increase in political volatility as people swing much more rapidly and violently from one party to another. They run after a new party in France. They swing from Brexit to back to Labour in Britain. I think we're seeing a loss of loyalty and a desire for solutions that has led to people to feel uncertain about where they should be.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll hear from some of our listeners about their thoughts or concerns about the fate of the West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Sarah Gonzalez, sitting in for Brian, and we are speaking with Bill Emmett, former editor-in-chief of The Economist and chairman of The Wake Up Foundation. He's here to help us make sense of the recent elections in the U.S., France, and the U.K. And he's talking to us about his new book that claims the West as a political idea needs saving. I want to go to some listeners. First, we'll start with Robert in Denville, New Jersey. Hi, Robert.
Hi. My basic thought is that one of the other things that we have to be wary of is, as well as kind of a regressivist idea and too much power being concentrated in the hands of the elite, is also the idea that the free exchange of ideas is constantly under threat, especially in college campuses today. It seems like a lot of times kids that I get entering the workforce out of college are not capable of vetting good ideas and differentiating between good ideas and bad ideas, and they really haven't been exposed to a wide breadth of opinions and viewpoints. And I think that that's a huge challenge, because that constant exchange of ideas is how the cream rises to the top and we get the best ideas that we use to advance civilization. So that's my thought, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. Thanks.
Do you have any thoughts on that? So it seems like you're saying that there's less openness to new ideas in college campuses, and that you're attributing to maybe the fall of the West?
Well, my view, I think it's an interesting point that Robert makes. I think, of course, as an independent journalist, I believe in free speech and the free exchange of ideas. And I think two things have happened. One is an increased sort of assertion of a sort of safe spaces, no platforming, and a hostility to ideas that are disliked, which sometimes feels justifiable in that, you know, ruling out hate speech is clearly feels right, but in a particularly in a college environment, I think is taken too far quite often, and thwarts some of the critical thinking and open argument that I think you're rightly looking at. Secondly, it's a question of whether the colleges are receiving pupils coming from high schools that have had an adequate education in civic thinking and critical thinking, and I think certainly in many countries, I'm not familiar, of course, directly with the U.S. system, but in the U.K., we often worry that our high school education system is not encouraging that civic thinking and critical thinking enough.
Okay, now I want to go to Danny in Cornwall, New York. Hi, Danny. Hello?
Good job hosting the show. I have to say that first off. Second off, I'm thinking that Donald Trump seems to be acting like a rich person, which obviously he is. He's closing us down. He's walling us off. He doesn't want us in his neighborhood. And I'd like to hear your guests speak to that.
Well, I agree with you. I think that his basic instinct is the instinct of the person who climbs up a ladder to success and then pulls up the ladder to prevent anyone else climbing up. I mean, of course, he inherited his wealth as well as making it during his own career, but he, I think, is a closer-off, a waller-off, and I think not an encourager of free thinking. I absolutely agree with that. He's not alone in that. I think people of his nature, billionaires especially, often get to where they are and then like to create their own monopolies and their own secret gardens, if you like, of life. And then when they get into politics, they try to protect that and their friends. Crony capitalism is the problem, and democracy has to fight against that.
Just to add to that, the Guardian reports that over 1,000 people were detained while protesting against President Putin in Russia yesterday. If Americans have taken Western ideals like openness and equality for granted, as you write, and meanwhile people in other countries are with repressive governments are sort of fighting for these rights that we have, is the election of President Trump a wake-up call for some Americans?
I think it has been a wake-up call for many Americans. I think that the protests, the marches, the Women's March, and other forms of activity have been a salutary response to the dangers of what has happened. And we've seen some increase in similar activism in Europe as well, in response to some of the fears that that people have suddenly discovered the sense that democracy could be under threat. Watching what happens in Russia tells you how easy it is for a powerful government, a powerful figure like Putin, to close off protest and to lock people up, to take over the media, to suppress free speech, and claim and pretend to be running a democracy.
You make an argument, though, that Trump's election isn't, it might be a wake-up call, but that it's maybe not that, it's not good enough because there's a lot of misinformation.
Well, I think that, first of all, I think it's a mistake to think that the only lesson of an election of somebody like Trump is that you need to oppose the particular victor, the particular individual. His election was a symptom. I mean, it was a consequence of anger and disillusionment and negative feelings about the alternative, as well as about the life prospects and the inequality that people faced. So he's a person who's identified some of the right problems, even if he's bringing the wrong solutions. Secondly, I think what's important is for other political forces now to produce a more positive alternative to the sort of Trump administration vision, and to present themselves in elections at every level, offering a positive view of what can be done instead.
What's an example of a place or time where the idea of the West was thriving?
Well, I think that if we look at our post-1950 era, I think that the West has thrived for most of that time. I think in recent history, I'd say the 1990s was the halcyon era for the West, but it was also true, I'd say, in the late 70s and early 80s. But we often get pessimistic about it. I quote in the book the former leader of West Germany, Willy Brandt, who in 1974 was quoted as predicting that democracy was going to die in Western Europe within 20 years, whereas, in fact, later in that decade, it flourished with pro-democracy revolutions in Portugal and Greece, the death of Franco in Spain and the establishment of democracy, and then ultimately the fall of the Berlin Wall and the spread of democracy into Central and Eastern Europe. So we often feel pessimistic, but actually then make a new push forward. And so I want to be optimistic. I think we can defend the values that have got us to where we are, and we can make, you know, new pushes forward of progress.
Okay, I want to go to another listener. We have Charles in Queens. Hi, Charles.
Hi. I find it ironic that the guest here mentions about the Western democracy, but there's three characteristics of the West that's going to keep the West free, and that is borders, language, and culture. You mentioned the rule of law as being in danger, but we have laws on the books as to the amount and of immigrants, legal immigrants into this country. The present administration is not saying that we do not need immigrants. He just wants legal immigrants. There is a big difference. Thank you.
Charles, stay on the line. Do you wanna weigh in on what he's? Oh, I think we lost Charles. But what do you think of his pushback?
Well, I think all countries want the rule of law. All countries have issues with illegal versus legal immigrants. This is not unique to the United States, but the rest of us don't necessarily think that building walls is the way to deal with it. Claiming that you're going to get Mexico to pay for the wall and acting in a very aggressive way towards your neighbor. So that's really the difference between us. I think previous administrations have also tried to deal with illegal immigration. President Obama deported 2 million illegal immigrants, undocumented migrants, over during his term. So it's not a new phenomenon, but the method of immigration, immigration reform to clear up the process so that the right people can become legal immigrants is surely the right approach.
Okay, I want to go now to Lucy in Morris County. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, so my question and comment is that to me, President Trump is creating a lot of chaos and distractions of all kinds. I think it'll affect our economy. It'll affect everything. Healthcare, which I used to work in. And it's just going to affect everything. If you tear everything down, then everybody's going to need him more. It's a form of oppression to me. I don't like it. I think we're headed in the wrong direction. And frankly, I'm scared. I'm really scared.
All right. Thank you for your comment. Did you have a question?
Not at this time. I just had that comment. I think we need to be careful. It's just he's creating a lot of chaos, and it's going to affect everything.
Okay, thanks for your call, Lucy. And now we will hear from Lisa in Long Branch, New Jersey. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question for the speaker is it possible that people have less tolerance for free speech these days when a lot of what is put forth as free speech is actually lies, particularly lies coming out of the right since, I'd say, the 1990s?
Well, I think that there is a problem with free speech based on the internet and the, if you like, the cacophony of sources of information that have come up. I don't think that's a phenomenon that we can reverse, but nevertheless probably has damaged a sense of adherence to free speech and to the quality of information, that you can believe whatever you want to. I don't think lies only come from the right, unfortunately. I think that the willingness to lie in pursuit of advantage, politically or otherwise, is an eternal thing, but it's become more powerful thanks to some of the trends of the internet that we've seen.
You write that we've been talking about how this idea of the West is sort of under attack from within. What about outside factors? Is the West under attack from outside groups?
Well, I think that we've always been under attack from outside groups. I think that the Cold War was a period of being under attack from communist countries. We've felt dangers from instability in the Middle East before. We had an Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s. We had an Algerian civil war in the 1990s. We've had flows of migrants before as well. We've had terrorism before. So I think that there are many threats around us, including the aggressive behavior of Russia in Eastern Europe and in Ukraine, and the seizure of Crimea and provinces of Georgia, for example, and of course the efforts of Islamic State and the terrorism that we've tragically seen in my country on three occasions in the last couple of months, and of course in France, much in an incredibly dramatic form 18 months ago. So we are under threat, but I don't believe that those threats are of a unusual or new nature. I think that we're always under such threats, and we need to be vigilant against them and find our ways to push back. But the main problem we have is our internal weakness because of our own mistakes that have weakened our economies, divided our societies, lost people a sense of opportunity and equality and participation. That then divides us from one another and then makes us weaker in response to these external threats.
And so the ideals, your main takeaway here is that the ideas that the ideals that make us the modern West are sort of in jeopardy because of a rise in nationalism and a desire to close our borders. Just very quickly, do you see a country that's next in line to be facing the same kind of struggle between liberal and populist ideals that we're seeing here now?
Well, certainly, if you're interested in elections and sudden swings of power, Italy is the place to look at, where the Five Star Movement, set up by a comedian, Beppe Grillo, is hostile to a lot of the system of the country, and it's leading in the opinion polls. There'll be an election by next May at the earliest.
All right, and that's all the time we have with Bill Emmett, former editor-in-chief of The Economist, chairman of the Wake Up Foundation, and author of The Fate of the West, The Battle to Save the World's Most Successful Political Idea. Bill, thanks so much for coming on. That is all for the Brian Lehrer Show today. I'm Sarah Gonzalez. Thank you so much for joining me. Brian will be here at 2 p.m. today ahead of the Attorney General testimony. We'll be carrying it live. Talk to you next time.